Welcome to TV I Say with Ashley Ray, your go-to podcast for discovering what to watch on TV and getting you closer to the TV shows you love. I'm Ashley Ray, a comedian, writer, and former TV critic, and each week my friends, fellow comedians, actors, writers will drop by to dive into the best TV shows we're all talking about right now. All right, let's get into it.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun. And that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Chris Gethard, welcome to TV Club. Chris is a comedian and author. You know who he is. I don't really think I need to introduce you. Your new book, though, Dad at Peace, is available now. And I'm going to do something kind of corny at the top here that I don't usually do. But my comedy album came out today. And it's number 3 on iTunes right now, which is crazy.
Hey.
But the first time I ever felt like a real comedian, I got booked on Limestone Comedy Festival. And you were headlining.
I remember that, Bloomington, Indiana.
Yeah, Bloomington, Indiana. And I got a picture with you and I was like, I've really made it. Wow, look at me. I'm doing That's this festival with awesome. A comic I love. And now my album's out today and I'm interviewing you. So I just really wonderful full circle moment. I'm so happy to have you here.
Well, congratulations on the album and thanks for having me today. And thanks for letting me know about that moment from our shared past.
Yeah.
That was a good festival.
It's a good festival. It's surprisingly good for being in the middle of Indiana in a cornfield.
Yeah.
So
Yeah. That town never ceases. Like every time I've been out to Bloomington, I'm like, it's in the middle of nowhere, and then you got this weird little punk rock haven where there's all these artsy people hanging out.
Just artsy cool. In the middle of India, and it's great. So yeah. And I think that festival's coming up again. If you live in the Midwest, go check it out. I'm so happy to have you here. I want to talk about some TV news. Also, you are obsessed with wrestling like I am. So we got to talk about Dark Side of the Ring because the new season is premiering a few days after you're listening to this. So first, I want to talk to you about, and everyone's talking about, did you see Iron Claw? And how do you feel about all of the snubs it is getting?
The snubs are not okay. It was great. Not only did I see Iron Claw, I messed up real bad. And I'm glad you asked me about this. So I was visiting my parents, my wife and my kid and I. And one thing that really, you know, my wife and I helped put MoviePass out of business. We saw every movie. We used to see movies all the time. And then you have a kid, and that is one of the first things that goes because it's an hours-long commitment. You got to get the babysitter, and then if the movie's not good, you really feel like add $120 extra dollars just in babysitting fees. Like all these reasons that you can't go see movies when you have a kid, or that many people sacrifice. Blah blah blah. So we're visiting my parents. My son Cal goes to sleep. Howie and I are like, my folks are here. If he wakes up, we get to go see a movie. And my wife was like, I heard Iron Claw is like getting Oscar buzz.
Yeah.
And I know you love wrestling. Let's go check it out. And I was like, yes, I was hoping we could see that. And as we were driving over there, I was like, I know what this is about. And she doesn't.
Oh,
and
I
had this like brief realization of like, this is kind of the only date night we get. Like we haven't had a date night in months. I don't know the next time we're getting another one, but I really want to see Iron Claw. And she couldn't handle it. She couldn't handle it. And then after the movie, she was like, did you know that whole story? I was like, Yeah, I knew a lot of it. I knew a lot of it. I was like,
some
was,
of it, some of the details.
I was like, yeah, a little bit. I knew
just
a little bit.
I mean, actually, it might have even been even sadder. There was a whole other brother. They actually made it nice. They made it nicer than it was.
Not only did I know about most of that, but if you want me to fill you in on where they kind of actually soft pedaled things, yeah. I probably can. But
like,
she's so justifiably upset. Like, she was like, this was our date night. We could have seen Godzilla. We could have seen, like, she started naming all the other movies.
Mean Girls musical was out then.
Mean Girls the musical. Oh my goodness. I did screw that one up pretty good.
Yeah.
It's not a great date night flick.
They really did kind of market it as like a family Christmas film about wrestling and support and brothers. And I was just like, that's not the way to do that. It is not that, yeah, really.
But I thought it was really brilliant, and I thought the actors were really good, and the director is actually someone, I'm actually really, really good friends with one of his creative partners. So Sean Durkin is a guy I've met a bunch of times over the years, and he's the nicest guy. So I was so happy to see that story told well and to see him pull off that film. And yeah, it sounded like A24 just didn't have the budget to get it in the awards contention.
Yeah.
Which was a shame, because some of those actors, I think, absolutely could have been nominated.
This is my favorite thing I've ever seen Zac Efron in. Jeremy Allen White convinced me he was 6 feet tall the way he played Carrie. I was like, okay, I'll believe it.
I will say, and you tell me, like, I did know a lot about the story, and obviously Carrie is the one who, you know, between being in WWF when I was a kid, being the NWA world champ, like, he was the most high profile one if you weren't in Texas, I think.
Yeah,
I was an avid wrestling fan as a kid. But one thing I will say is that the movie showed me how much more severe the foot injury was than I'd ever known. I felt like that was one of the only things that was like kind of a wrestling secret that the movie let out. I didn't know he straight up didn't have a foot. I didn't know.
Which, like, kind of is mentioned in the Dark Side of the Ring episode about the Von Erichs, which, if you want the full sad story, they lay it all out for you. But even in that, they don't really get into the details of, like, how hard it was. They kind of make it sound like, oh, it was, like, at the ankle and he could still kind of manage. And it's only, like, with the movie, and there's been a lot of, like, YouTube interviews with wrestlers who are like, oh, no, he did not, like, from the knee, he had to use this prosthetic. There was a fight where it, like, came off and he had to hide his leg under the stage until someone could, like, get his prosthetic back. And now they're sharing all these stories. And I am just like, how did he keep wrestling? Like, how
really
are you doing all these moves?
The entirety of his WWF run, I believe.
Yeah, the whole
time.
That was
already the case, which is... Yeah. Bonkers. That's bonkers.
Just all the other wrestlers agreeing to like keep this secret, and he only let a few people really know what was going on. That speaks to the side I love of it, of just it is this community, this like group of brothers who, even, you know, with kayfabe and hating each other, don't really all support each other. So it was cool to see that actually in the movie. And I kind of wanted more of it. I kind of wanted more of like his struggle with that. But when you got to get like three deaths, and it's tough.
It was rough. It was a rough. My wife actually, right at the tail end, my wife was like, "I'll meet you in the lobby," and I was like, "Ooh, I get it.
Oh yeah." And that last scene is too hard to watch when Zach's just watching his kids, and he's like, "Oh," and I was sobbing when he's like, "Oh, I was a brother. I used to be a brother." Oh, that it was a lot.
Wrestling will break your heart.
And yeah, my family is from Texas. I grew up with World Class Championship Wrestling, so I love the Von Erichs. I loved Carrie. Bruiser Brody was more my guy, though.
Bruiser Brody is a madman. Those clips are the best.
They're the best. That's what I do when I have free time. I just watch vintage clips of Bruiser Brody.
There's nothing better than watching Bruiser Brody in Japan, like, leap the guardrail and watching people actually flee
and
turn
run
around
in fear.
And full on sprint, climb over chairs,
get away from him. And I am like, yeah, you should. He is just waving around a chain or a knife, and I would be afraid.
Bleeding from his head, waving chairs. But people flee as if he's an inhuman monster. It's the best.
It's the absolute best. And that was kind of part of his downfall, RIP to the realest one, in my opinion. But I'm waiting for that movie. When the Bruiser Brody movie happens, yeah, But yeah, my whole family was like, we got to go see this in theater. They all, it was like a big thing for them. And then they all just like called me sobbing and were like, I was like, you guys knew, you knew. Like, I don't know why you're acting surprised.
Was your family going to the Sportatorium back in the day?
Yeah. They're from Dallas. Yeah.
Oh, that's sick.
It was before my time, but my older brother and sister, like they have photos. They would go to like the grocery stores and the Von Erichs would like be outside signing stuff. My sister had like a signed Carrie poster.
That's so awesome.
Right? I'm just like, I'm so jealous of you guys.
I've always heard the Sportatorium was an amazing place to watch wrestling, but was also like literally a giant tin shack with no air conditioning.
Yeah, they were like, it was just a hot room. And it was also, it was really inclusive. They were like, it was one of the places where it was like black people, white people, we're all here for wrestling. And I was like, wow, look at you, Dallas. I also want to talk about some more wrestling news. So Dwayne Johnson, he secured ownership rights to 25 names and catchphrases, including Roc Nation, with a new agreement for WWE's parent company, which I'm just like, what are you going to do with that? The Roc?
He owns Candy Ass as well.
He owns Candy Ass now.
Yes, the phrase Candy Ass, copyrighted by Dwayne The Roc Johnson.
Yeah. Well, okay. Did he make that?
Can someone
prove that one?
That's wild. It is really wild. Although, I don't know if you want to get into it yet. You're aware of what happened with him in WrestleMania and Cody and everything?
No.
Oh, it's really good.
Oh,
it's really, really good.
Please let us.
If you want the
please.
Bullet points, and these are spoilers, basically, for a couple of years now, since Cody Rhodes came back to WWE from AEW, he's been just a straight up wholesome, like old school Von Erich style. He's just a baby face. He's a good guy with a good heart, and you should love him because you want the good guy to win, which is not really, wrestling hasn't been that since before the Attitude Era, really, you know, like Stone Cold Steve Austin kind of put that to bed. Like, we root for people who have rough edges,
the bad
or
boys.
Flaws. So Cody coming back and being like, no, like, take your vitamins, say your prayers. Like, I'm like, he's that guy. And for 2 years, they've been building him up and he's been getting over. And he fought Roman Reigns at WrestleMania last year. Everyone thought he was going to stop him. He didn't. Roman is still the champion. Cody Rhodes won the Royal Rumble, and the Royal Rumble winner gets to pick who they're going to fight at WrestleMania. So it's always, which of the champions do you want to fight? And everybody was like, oh, wow, that's how they're going to finish it. He lost. Spent a year stressing about it. And then he came out and they had this very weird kind of choppy thing where The Roc came out and it was. I mean, everybody's flipping out because it's The Roc.
Yeah.
And then they basically, Cody was like, I talked with The Roc and got some advice and I want to take you out, Roman, but not at WrestleMania.
Oh.
And it was like, oh, we're going to let The Roc and Roman fight at WrestleMania, which should be like actual national news that that's what they're going for. But the WWE fan base flipped out and lost their minds and was like, no,
they're
we
intense.
Want Cody. And the phrase, we want Cody, was trending for like 4 or 5 days straight.
Okay, I did see this part and I was
you
kind
start
of
to
like,
see the we
okay.
want Cody stuff. But then The Roc, in a way that makes me love The Roc, turned heel.
Ooh.
And went full bad guy on it and was like, all right, straight up, screw you then. And like slapped Cody across the face and was like, Roman is my cousin and you don't talk bad about our family. And like all these things of like, you're a disappointment to your dad, Dusty Rhodes.
I am so in on this.
Because bad guy Roc is the best.
Yeah. But
kudos to Dwayne Johnson because I mean, this man has a brand.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
the confidence to say, like, and he's being a real shithead heel. Like, he's not trying to halfway it. He's not trying to maintain his right to be charming Roc. He's like, no, in a wrestling context. Like, he's put up a few things on Instagram where some people have yelled at him. And he's been like, guys, I'm so happy I come from the world of pro wrestling. But we're at a point in history now where I can remind you, my job is to get you mad. And man, am I having so much fun seeing how pissed off you are right now. Like, he's owning it to that degree. But when you see how hard he's going in the like real like $1 million man, Roddy Piper level, just antagonizing these crowds, calling them Cody crybabies.
Amazing. Like, amazing. Like, he should.
Really
I hope he got ownership rights to that one. Cody crybabies.
I think
please.
It's part of why maybe he got the ownership stuff, because he was such a team player about whoa, they don't want me in the main event of WrestleMania, but he's The Rock. If he wants it, they're going to give it to him.
Yeah.
And all the chatter is that apparently it was him that was like, if they're booing me anyway, let's go full on bad guy on this.
It's been so good. I'm back in. Yeah. Okay. I gotta catch up. Did you watch Young Rock, by the way? Did you watch The Rock's
NBC did not.
Show?
I'm fascinated by it. I am very fascinated by it, but I didn't catch it.
I watched every single episode, and it is, I think if you like wrestling, it is worth watching because it gets into the history in a fun way and you see a lot of the stories like you've heard about his family. But it's also just like, why did they do this? Why did we need a Young Rock? But yeah,
it was really, and there's also like current indie wrestlers playing younger versions of wrestlers we grew up with, right? There's a lot of that.
Yeah, it's like it's a lot of AEW people, like playing, you know, older wrestlers, and it's
Colt Cabana plays the Brooklyn Brawler at one point, I believe. Yeah, my friend Colt Cabana.
There's really funny just impressions of them like doing their best to imitate these like people you can tell they loved. So it's sweet that way, but it got canceled. So
it's
a
weird idea for a show.
It was a little like, but hey, it was cute. Also, last bit of news, want to talk about the passing of Richard Lewis, who passed away last week when you're listening to this, but you know, just absolutely hilarious comedian. If you're watching this current season of Curb Your Enthusiasm, he's been incredible in it. And it's also the final season, so I feel like they were getting us ready to say goodbye to his character in the show. And now it's this even more heartbreaking goodbye. But Larry David just put out the sweetest statement about it. That was just, you know, he's like a brother to him. They were born 3 days apart in the same hospital. But today he made me sob, and for that I'll never forgive him. And just go watch the last season if you're not watching Curb.
He's very funny on that show, it turns out.
Yeah. Just funny guy, nice guy. Even my mom was like, this one hurts. Yeah.
I met him once briefly in passing, as I was entering some casting agency and he was leaving, and he was like stressed out and dressed outlandishly, and it was everything you wanted it to be for a 45-second interaction with Richard Lewis.
That sounds perfect. Yeah, just frantic, just nervous about something, and dressed oddly is exactly what I would want.
Whether you're shopping for grads, getting an early gift for dad, or just looking for a little something new or used for your shelf, you'll find it at HPB. And you'll get almost everything for an extra 20% off during the big sale at Half Price Books this Memorial Day weekend. Saturday, May 25th through Monday, May 27th, save big in-store at your local Half Price Books and at HPB.com. Offer cannot be combined with other coupons. Exclusions apply. To learn more, visit HPB.com.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
Let's dig into the watch list. That's what people care about. They want to know what you are watching on TV right now. You're a dad. Is it a lot of kids shows? Do you make time to watch your own shows?
I mean, I do get exposed to a ton of kids shows. I'll tell you, years ago, before it became a very buzzy thing, I was like, oh, Bluey is brilliant. It's Bluey and Sesame Street and then everything else when it comes to kids' entertainment. Bluey is really, truly, not only have I cried at episodes of Bluey, which are like 12 to 15 minutes long, I have cried at an episode of Bluey that famously has no dialogue. If you watch the Rain episode.
The Rain episode, yes.
By the end, I was just like, so much gets asked of moms, man. They just they ask so much of moms. So yeah, I've seen a lot of Bluey. My kid's also obsessed right now with a show called Heroes of Gujitsu, which is anybody who grew up around when I did, you'll be fascinated by this show because it's all on YouTube. is very cheaply made. It is such a bold-faced excuse to just sell toys. But it literally is like, hey, here's these creatures that got hit with goo and it turned them into half man, half animals. And I'm like, that's just the turtles. All of their toys are like super stretchy. And I'm like, that's just Stretch Armstrong.
Yeah.
A lot of them, like the tiger one is named Tigor. I'm like, that's just He-Man. This is just,
they didn't even try here.
They just mashed up all these other previous shows from my generation and were like, kids, go make your parents spend money on this. So yeah, a lot of kids shows on in my house, but I'll tell you the one I will say, I don't know how valuable I'll be for the conversation because having a kid means I very often can only sink my teeth into one show at a time right now.
Yeah.
And the one show right now, and I feel like such a cheesy white suburban dad saying this, Apple TV Plus, Masters of the Air.
Chris, I am so happy you brought this show up. Not even
that's my show.
Not even 30 minutes ago, I was saying to my producer, I need to talk about this show.
Oh, good.
Because I am watching it and I don't know anyone else who is.
Nobody's really talking about it.
And
it's
Apple
pretty
TV.
Good.
It's good. And they spent so much money. Every famous person is there. The graphics look good. It's you can tell a lot of thought was put
also,
into this show.
The battles. The actual dogfights and planes getting, you know, the bombers getting run down by enemy fighters. Like, it looks good and terrifying. And I would say, because, again, I will say, I know I'm a 43-year-old white guy who works on my lawn a lot. It's a little too on brand to be really into a show about World War II.
It is such a white guy World War II show.
This show exists for me to have something to talk about with my dad. Like, that's the demographic they want, is my dad and me, two generations of white men who are not emotionally vulnerable with each other, but can talk about Masters of the Air. But that being said, I am of the opinion that not only is Band of Brothers one of the best things that HBO ever did.
Yeah.
I have sometimes said that I think because it's a miniseries, it gets forgotten in the conversation about the golden age of HBO because there's only a handful of episodes. So people talk about, is it The Wire? Is it The Sopranos? You know, you put Deadwood in there and I sit there and I go, Band of Brothers is arguably as good as any of those.
But
it doesn't come up in the same conversation.
Yeah, people treat it differently because of the limited series thing.
Yes.
But I mean, that's the one in my high school. They had us watch it to learn about the war.
It's brilliant. And I would go so far as to say that I don't think the current one on Apple is as good as Band of Brothers.
No.
But I would say I think it is better than The Pacific.
Oh, yeah. It's way better than The Pacific. That show.
The Pacific's narratives didn't hold together.
Yeah. That one.
They tried to cram a few disparate stories together in a way that didn't totally work. But if you liked Band of Brothers and found yourself a little underwhelmed by The Pacific, I think you gotta watch this show. And I'm not certain why it's not getting a little bit more chatter.
Yeah, I mean, you got Austin Butler, you got Barry Keoghan, you got the new Doctor Who guy. You got everyone is in it, and no one is like, oh my goodness, yeah, the thing Austin Butler did after Elvis, which you think would be a big deal. I will say I studied German history in college. I am a bit of a World War II nerd in a way where I did have white guy friends in high school. And so I'm right there in on it. I'm just like, here we go. Everybody knows like what day of the war this is. They're about to bomb Dresden. And it's just, I love it. It's yeah.
I text my dad about it because my dad is a guy who's pretty obsessed with World War II. You know, my dad was born in 1953. So he grew up.
Oh, so is my mom.
So you know, like they were very much around people who had been heroes in this triumphant victory where there were actual evil bad guys that for decades we have all talked about. But I will text my dad and be like, man, I didn't even realize that the B-17s were basically just tin cans in the sky. Like those things got shot up. I always heard they were badass. He's like, well, they were badass, but until there was proper fighter support, they were sitting ducks up there.
Yep, they're sitting ducks. And truly,
and that's
in
like,
little
that's
tin
what
cans.
That's what me and my dad get to text about now. It's nice.
Oh my, the episode where the guy, like the window breaks, so the air temperature drops and he pisses himself and like freezes himself to the point where he has to like go to the hospital and can't walk. I was like, oh, right. That makes a ton of sense that they were dealing with this.
I was really struck by something that I've totally come around on, which is as a really As a very obsessive Band of Brothers guy, I've watched Band of Brothers in its entirety at least 10 times.
That's incredible. Yeah.
I think it's really, really good and really meaningful, let alone all the footage of the veterans who are still alive talking straight to camera. And you're like, it was all real. Oh, jeez. Yeah. But one of the things this show is really doing a good job of is these flyers who were largely in England, and you see them playing cards and going out to bars. And there was a part of me going, man, why are they telling this story? Because it seems like these guys were very pampered compared to some of the people who were more literally in the trenches. And then you start to realize that the show is extraordinarily aware of that. And it's like, oh, no. These people were in England playing cards until they got sent up into the sky, at which point they had to spend a few hours enduring the scariest thing you could ever see or experience. No one's ever been more scared than a B-17 crew when they realized the Germans became aware of where they were.
And you realize,
oh, this is like a horror movie where I was wrong. They sucked me in, making me think, oh, these spoiled flyboys. And it's like, oh, no.
And you're like, oh, they got a safe place to go back home and land. No. And then the minute you see them jumping out of their planes to evacuate, and you see the guy who like gets caught and hit by another plane and is just sliced in half while he's trying to like get his parachute to work, I was like, oh, right. Okay. No. Yeah. This is the worst job. I don't want this one. I don't want this job.
Like, yeah, these guys were just chilling in England, but they deserved that stress relief in between these missions. Let alone, you know, I don't want to spoil it too bad, but I don't think anyone will be shocked considering what it's about. The one of the things that's both gripping about this show narratively and also shocking when you remind yourself that it's based on real events is you go, the percentage of these people that died is staggering. And mind-numbing, let alone sometimes it's like planes land and there's like a pilot and one gunner alive and there's six dead bodies of their friends that they just had to fly back with. And you're like, oh, this is so disturbing. War is awful. What is wrong with humanity? What is happening? It's a great show.
And they really are real about the deaths. Like, any character can die at any moment. You're like, oh, this guy's too famous to die. Like, you don't bring this guy in and have him die. And then, no, he will die. They don't care. It is very...
It doesn't matter what level of actor is playing a character, what level of investment they've asked of you. You might get surprised. Yeah. Like, Game of Thrones style, you might just go, whoa.
Oh, my. Like, I didn't think they'd take out, you know, Austin Butler, which, not a spoiler, they haven't yet. I don't know. But, like, he could go. He could go, but
they would have no qualms beheading that guy on camera if that's what happened to
him in his Elvis accent, which I love that he is playing. What if Elvis was in World War II? That's how I see him doing the role. And it's working for me. It is working.
Who's your favorite so far?
Ooh, I loved Barry's character. I forgot his name. Barry Keoghan's character, the like guy with the thick Boston accent. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I thought he was really fun. And now my favorite is the navigator guy. I don't know any of their names. FYI.
Crosby is the navigator with motion sickness.
Yes, he's my favorite now because he's just always like a bumbling idiot on the plane, and he's like, "Oh, I don't know, guys. Maybe." And then he always saves the day, and they're like, "You're actually the best guy here." And I'm like, "See, oh, he proved himself." Yes,
not an easy acting gig. Yeah. Not an easy acting gig. I'm becoming a big Rosie Rosenthal fan on my end. I don't know how deep into the show you are.
I did not watch this week's, but that's
I watched this week's this morning. That is a show that I will go up into my office and go, I'm just going to quietly watch this because I won't be able to stop thinking about it.
Usually I watch it as soon as I get the like Apple TV says it's up. I'm like, got to get in. Let's go, my boys. But I had to watch a 4-hour Bon Jovi documentary this week for work. So I had to do that instead, and I was like, oh, Masters, that's gonna have to wait until tomorrow. I gotta get my 4-hour Bon Jovi doc on.
I'm sure you've talked about it already. I just did watch this past week with my wife the We Are the World documentary on Netflix.
What'd you think about that?
Well, I'm a Jersey guy, so seeing Bruce at kind of the height of his superpowers and seeing how the rest of all those 80 stars put Bruce on his own plane was wild to see. Because, I mean, it's not like these were small potatoes acts.
Yeah.
But they all still were kind of like, Bruce is the alpha right now. And that was kind of wild to see captured because I think that was only a few years there. But the other obvious thing is if you have not watched the We Are the World documentary.
It's on Netflix, by the way.
It's on Netflix. And I can tell you, there are few things that have made me kind of just instinctively laugh from my gut more than watching Bob Dylan's behavior throughout this whole experience.
Yes. Bob Dylan is the best part of it.
There is no one has ever felt more uncomfortable in a social setting than Bob Dylan during the recording of We Are the World. And it's endearing to watch and so bizarre.
So bizarre. Every moment you can just tell he does not want to be there. Even when Diana Ross is like, oh my gosh, I'm such a Bob Dylan. Oh, he's just like, please don't talk to me. He just wants to hide.
And they'll do these slow pans where you're like, there's Cyndi Lauper, Huey Lewis, Lionel Richie, Diana Ross, truly uncomfortable Bob Dylan. And now there's Billy Joel. There's, and you're just like, what? He just stands out like a sore thumb with his visible discomfort. And yeah. It's so funny.
Even in the choir scenes, like he is not singing. You can tell he's just like, I don't even know where we are in the lyrics right now.
And again, are we allowed to spoil stuff or no?
Yes. Yeah. For this one, you can. Yeah.
The scene, the fact that there's a scene where Stevie Wonder effectively has to teach Bob Dylan how Bob Dylan would intersect with this song by impersonating Bob Dylan to Bob Dylan is really, really weird and a cool scene.
It's so cool. I was just like, I wish I could see that and hear that of just, okay, Bob, so this is what you sound like. And here's how you should do it.
Stevie Wonder.
And it's Stevie Wonder. I just, all of the interactions between people. I also love this. There's a point in here for the truthers that Stevie can see. They tell a story about Stevie Wonder leading Ray Charles to the bathroom.
They do. I clocked that.
Yeah. And everybody's like, yeah, he's okay. Okay, Stevie. But
if that ever comes out as true, that will be one of the most mind-blowing secrets that's been kept in my lifetime.
That would be probably the best kept conspiracy in the world if it's true. And the evidence is pretty damning. I mean, he led him to the bathroom. Come on. Okay.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
what we do here at TVISA. We are the leading podcast in can Stevie C conspiracies.
And you also believe there is an inside government agent named Q who has been letting us know about.
He's been dropping hints constantly.
Yep.
I also loved the part with Al Jarreau, who was so drunk they had to hide bottles of champagne from him. And then you just see him trying to drunkenly stumble through it. And the second they get him to do it right, they're just like, good, moving on. Let's go.
It's also really lovely to, I thought, handled very in a very classy fashion by the filmmakers, where they include Lionel Richie, who co-wrote the song, and talking about co-writing it with Michael Jackson. And you're like, that's so fascinating.
Yeah.
But they do also include just enough of people giving quotes that are not throwing the song under the bus or trashing it, but where there's some self-awareness of people being like, yeah, the song set out with the goal and it accomplished its goal.
Yeah.
And there's like some people who you can tell are aware that song is not regarded well as far as standing the test of time as a pop song, but they don't have people going like, yeah, this song kind of blows. Like, they don't do that, but they have some classy recognition.
Very classy.
Like,
yeah.
Happy to get in there and do my part and help with a song that was really of the moment. Like a lot of money
was spent on it, and I'm happy we did that. And I did like when Cyndi Lauper was like, yeah, my boyfriend didn't want me to do it because he was like, that song's going to be shit. It's going to be absolutely horrible.
Uh-huh. And Springsteen had a couple quotes of like, man, what a good mission that we got together on. And I think it raised a lot of money and it was cool to be in the room with all those people. And then he just kind of keeps nodding, and you're like, oh, you know that song.
You know it
sucks.
It's not a good song. I tried listening to it after watching it. I was like, yeah, let me go revisit and, you know, remember. And I was like, oh, right, this is horrible. This is not a good song. It doesn't even really make sense. And when they show them writing the lyrics, it is very, that's what you thought? Okay. You guys were just kind of like, we are the world. Boom. Answer. That's how we fix it. Starving people. We are the world. Music.
Yeah. It was an interesting one. I liked it.
Yeah, it's a good one. I'm gonna share some stuff from my watch list. Let me actually decide. I maybe
it's Masters of the Air, right? Masters of the... I always mix it up with Masters of the Sky, which is probably a condemnation of that
I
show.
I think it's Masters of the Air.
Why? I'm like, why isn't anyone talking about this show that even I can't remember the name of?
I think I've definitely just been calling it Masters of Air since I've been watching it. So, so yeah, Masters of the Air on Apple TV. Go watch that one. I am going to share from my watch list this week. Obviously everyone watches it, but I have not given this new season of Abbott Elementary a proper shout out. And after the fifth episode that aired last week, I think this third season is hitting the highs of seasons one and two. So I want to give it a shout out. This last one's really funny. I wasn't sure how I felt about them separating Janine into this new role that they kind of are doing. No spoilers, but I was a little like, I don't know. I like Janine in the school. I like her interacting with the rest of the cast. But they found some good ways to get her back in there. Do you watch Abbott Elementary?
I'm not up to date, but I've watched a whole bunch. It's one of the shows that I've fallen behind on as a parent. But I will say I was very impressed in watching the first episode how quickly I was like, this show's funny. And it also has some really good intentions that you could feel immediately. Like, this show is trying to say some good things about teachers. I like this show and I like its heart.
Yeah.
Maybe more than any other show's pilot has ever hit me with that. Of like, okay, this show has a little bit of a mission to it in a way that I like. And on top of it, it's really funny.
Exactly. It came out kind of, it's like a perfect combination of that Parks and Rec office humor with that ride of like really positive Ted Lasso shows. But not in a way where it is so saccharine I want to throw up. It is like, oh no, we can still make jokes and like point out that these teachers are also kind of dumb sometimes. It's this new one is great. Larry Owens is in it. His boyfriend's trying to break up with him, which leads to just some great, jokes. So I wanted to go watch Abbott Elementary, the new season, catch up on it. They're doing good over there.
I will.
I know I gave Not Dead Yet a shout out, which again, I think I'm the only person watching. But it comes on after Abbott Elementary if you also are watching and want to message me about her potential new love interest. Brad Garrett's on the show now, if anyone cares. She still sees dead people. So are you watching Not Dead Yet on ABC?
No, I can't say that I am. And
While
that was a commendable effort to get people to watch, the phrase Brad Garrett's on it, if anyone cares, is not the strongest advertisement I've
ever
heard.
What's funny is that the show thinks it's a very strong advertisement. Every promo is like, and now with Brad Garrett. And I'm like, who is this for? It's just for me. It's just for the person who's like, oh yeah, I loved him and Everybody Loves Raymond. I'm in. Yeah. TV, I say.
Whether you're shopping for grads, getting an early gift for dad, or just looking for a little something new or used for your shelf, you'll find it at HPB. And you'll get almost everything for an extra 20% off during the big sale at Half Price Books this Memorial Day weekend. Saturday, May 25th through Monday, May 27th, save big in-store at your local Half Price Books and at HPB.com. Offer cannot be combined with other coupons. Exclusions apply. To learn more, visit HPB.com.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang it in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
Get into the book Dad at Peace, which is available now. What was this process like putting this together?
It's been fun. It's actually the third in a little series. There was Dad at Pills, where I talked about what it was like having a kid and also being somebody who's been medicated for depression and anxiety and a bunch of serious stuff, and how our dads did not talk to us about that. So I'm kind of the first generation that's like, no, we talk about this now. And how do you talk about it with a kid? Because we never had
never
that.
Never did, yeah. Which yeah. It's good to hear our parents are born the same year, because my mom, when I told her, like, I think I'm depressed, she was truly like, you just need more vitamin D. You just need more sunshine. And I was like, oh, okay.
There was, I had a lot of those conversations. And I did a second book called The Lonely Dad Conversations, where I talk to other dads I know about how it's a terrifically lonely process. And then this third one is Dad at Peace, where I talk mostly about how I've kind of given up on a lot of my old dreams because my kid is more fun than my dreams. And I know that's very cheesy, but there's a lot of truth to it.
Yeah. I mean, in what kind of ways? I would imagine, you know, in comedy, it's always the be a big star, do the next thing, like sell out Madison Square Garden. And what were those kind of dreams?
Well, you know, I hosted a TV show on cable for years, and it started as a public access show, and then it was on cable for 3 years. And that was kind of a rare story. And I think kind of gave me a reputation as this sort of outsider guy who made his way to the inside. And there's some coolness to that and some hipness to that. And that was nice to live in for a while. But that show got canceled 2018. My son was born April 2019. And then before his first birthday, the world shut down. So it was a very strange, just like, oh, you had this momentum and this trajectory, and now you're going to sit in your house with your new life and you're going to think about how all the momentum stopped. And what I realized was, you know, I got to be around my kid a lot more than I would have. Because if it was not for the pandemic, and not that the pandemic was in any way a good thing, but I would have been pursuing more acting jobs. I would have been doing more stand-up on the road. I would have felt pressure to make as much money as I made back when I had a TV show. And I started to realize, oh, I'm making a lot less money, but we are okay as a family, and I'm much happier hanging out and being home. And that idea that you're not allowed to make less money than you made a year or two ago is an external pressure that is kind of, I think, a very American thing. You know, the idea of, I used to be on a TV show and I need to go book some acting gigs to keep my Q rating up, or whatever they call it. That's a very, you know, very driven by capitalism type of pressure. And I was caught in this moment with the world where I go, you know what? My kid likes, he likes trucks and he likes rocks and he likes hanging out with me. And then I started to be able to take a step back and go, you know, when I had my TV show, I was grinding my teeth so bad that two different teeth of mine cracked and fell out in our writer's room of the show. And again, it's a lucky life. I do not want to sit here and complain about having had a TV show. It was cool and it was great and it was fun and I worked with a lot of friends and it was beautiful. But was I happy? Starting to realize my version of happiness and my definition of it is changing. So I went and got myself a day job for the first time in decades, which a lot of people who have known me forever are like, wait, like you've had like a successful career for a while. And I was like, I did not want the pressure of acting gigs to be my son's health insurance, you know? Like, same thing people started to hear about in the strike. I once got 5 checks on the same day from Broad City Residuals.
That's a great show.
And I was
show.
Like, oh, loved being on that show, played Alana's boss. It was so fun.
Yeah.
I get these 5 checks. I'm like, amazing. 5 came in at once. Maybe I'm going to get health insurance. And I opened them up, and the 5 checks in total added up to less than $3. And I was like, this cannot be how I get my son health insurance. It's too much pressure.
It's too risky. Like, as a writer who experienced the strike, I got a day job and I'm very like, oh, it doesn't have to be the what's the next gig? How do I make sure I have everything? Am I making enough? Does this count? It's just,
what are people saying? What are people thinking? Who else is getting this job and that job? It's all those things are external. And I think a lot of us learned it. And I'm at a point too where my son kind of taught me how good it felt to chill out and how many things I was kind of missing through my own anxieties. And I've scaled back about 40 to 50% of my entertainment pursuits. And what I'm finding is that the ones that I'm still opting into, I'm remembering like, oh no, I do this part of it because it's really fun.
Yeah.
I'm doing this part of it because I really love it. I still like getting on stage in a room with some tiny room with like 90 people and I can make eye contact with all of them. Now, I used to be able to sell hundreds of tickets and now it's less ticket sales. It's been a while since my show got, but I don't care. I like the small room with the eye contact. I like it. I like it, and that's okay. And I have to be vulnerable enough to admit, like, I know that externally people might go, you went really downhill. And some of that is because I let a lot of this momentum go, but I'm happy.
I don't think
and
they'd
I have to
say
be confident
that.
I think, who knows? I think, who are these phantoms that I just invented
who,
in my head?
First of all, who? Don't Twitter
but that's
people?
How we
don't
think
listen.
As artists.
Yeah.
That's how we think as
exactly.
artists.
Exactly.
Right?
And I wanted to ask, you know, this kind of chilling out and slowing down, how do you feel it has helped or enhanced your work? Because I think when you get caught in that grind of like, I have to do the next thing, I have to be relevant, I have to stay, you know, with that star rating and being in the papers and having my name out there, it makes you create stuff you're not always proud of that is just kind of to stay relevant. And being more selective, for me at least, I love it. I love being able to like take my time and go, I don't need to rush this, you know. So yeah, I'm just curious if you found that.
Same exact page of I had hit a point where, and there's people who pull it off and are great at it. But when I was, you know, I'm not trying to pat myself on the back because it feels so long ago, but it was like 2017. I was like, man, I was hosting my show on True TV. I had an HBO special. Yeah. I had a podcast that exploded in 2016 and got featured on This American Life, and hundreds of thousands of people were listening to it. I still do that one, Beautiful Anonymous. It's great. I was in Mike Birbiglia's movie about an improv group, which was like a surprise indie hit.
Good movie.
Those all happened within 18 months of each other. And what I found was all of those things were incredible dopamine rushes, and some of them were big financial windfalls. But I also felt very absent from my own ability to hang on to relationships that are really meaningful to me and to have a sense of agency and call my own shots and what my days looked like and what my life was. And I started to almost feel a little bit like an exhausted spectator watching a person have all these successes instead of experiencing those successes themselves, which is really sad. I've never actually verbalized it that way or said it out loud. But I sit here, I go, if you think about 2017, like financially, I'm making a fraction of what I made then. And I also have a mortgage and a kid now. Like I have more pressure and less money. But do I miss my teeth falling out and like 9 calls a day about my schedule for the next day because there's so much going on? Like, no, God bless the people I know who are go-getters who that fits them.
Yeah.
Because there are. We both know.
Yeah,
there are people in entertainment
who are all about that, who want the packed calendars. Not me.
They want it, and they want to be on planes, and they want to be traveling, and they want to be going to premieres, and they want to be invited to parties, and they want all this stuff. And it's like, I see some of my friends who can handle that and who take to it, and it's natural to them, and doesn't even feel gross or sleazy. It just feels like, oh no, that's your personality.
Yeah, that's what you like to do. And yeah,
God bless them. It was kind of turning me into a person who I didn't feel very in control of. And that's not a great feeling.
Yeah. And I think it's, you have to kind of accept that moment of, because I also, there's this pressure of, you're supposed to want to be that person. You're supposed to want to like be out and have fun and hang and all that. And it's like, is it okay that I just want to stay home? I mentioned my album's out today. All my friends were like, are you going to do a big release party? Are you going to hang? And I was like, I would really just love to stay at home and eat my favorite food with someone I love. That's I'm good.
And I also need to be clear too, for anybody listening who's like, oh, boo hoo hoo, you had a TV show. I'm like, yeah, no, I get it. I'm with you. Like, I don't regret it. I would do it all again. And I loved it. But now I'm 6 years out from when things were at their most fever pitched. And I look back and I'm like, that was weird. So I'm not trying to complain too much.
I mean,
I'm saying, like, I'm glad my kid was born when he was, because he represented this really major opportunity to just redefine my priorities. And for me, that felt like an escape hatch from something that was very cool and that I'm lucky I lived, but that I don't see ending well if it continues.
Yeah. And I also, you know, it isn't boo-hoo, but I do think there's this element of that version of fame, that version of at least for comedians, of like having the TV show, the successful podcast, that doesn't exist anymore. Like, it was this like golden age of you do stand up, you do this, you get a show, you host something. And now it's, you do, maybe you'll get a TikTok deal if enough people like you. Maybe you can do a collab post with a travel company.
Which is also, too, one of the things about comedy I really worry about for people coming up now is there used to be a necessary point for you to find a larger community.
Yeah.
Like, at some point, you'd get good enough as a performer or a writer, and you'd start to find the other people who were in your network, and you'd start to find the mentors that could help you take the next step. And at some point, it necessarily became an in-person endeavor where you were around those people. And now, like you said, a lot of it's like, no, you're an influencer doing this in a room in your basement by yourself forever.
Yeah.
And that feels very lonely and psychologically risky to me.
Yeah. And it just creates very siloed comedy that doesn't feel like it builds off of anything. There's no sort of communication between any of it. And a lot of it becomes repetitive in that way, where you are seeing like the same person, do the same type of joke on all these different platforms because you just want it to pop off and trend. And yeah, it makes me very worried for the state of comedy, which...
Yeah, and it also makes you wonder in 5 years, 10 years, as experienced showrunners retire.
Yeah.
And people start to become showrunners who had to fight to be allowed on sets to see how shoots unfold. And now the people they're hiring are people who come from a TikTok, Instagram background, which I don't want to be a Luddite and say boo-hoo, but I go, but it's not a... They have not had those steps that necessitate learning how to be part of a community endeavor. Yeah. Sit there and you go, man, TV's going to suck. There's going to be a blip where TV really sucks.
Yeah.
Because we let some of the old traditions go, and some of the things that are replacing them won't fill out the skill set. So just on a nerdy, like, logistics, what happens to make a TV show exist level, we're kind of letting some of the traditions die out, and it's going to mean a few years there where TV just...
Yeah.
Honestly, is ass.
Is ass. When you look at why Abbott Elementary is a success, it's because Quinta came up in comedy. She did stand up. She was in this community of, you know, learning what other people were doing. She put in a lot of work on failed TV shows and all of that. And that led to, you know, Abbott Elementary being great, hitting at the right moment. And now you don't see that kind of growth. It is, you make it, you are popular, and then they're like, give them some money. Let's try a pilot. Why not? Throw them out there with a 6-episode whatever that we're not going to promote and that no one will watch. And then we'll say, see, you're not that great. And cancel it. And it all leaves me very worried. But hey, writing books is great.
Oh yeah. I feel lucky to keep scrapping it out, finding ways to pay the mortgage.
Do you think there will be a fourth edition of Dad Life?
No, this one, I'm done talking about Dad Life for a while. I think, it's obviously been really on my mind, and becoming a dad right before the pandemic was a pressure cooker that I needed to sort out, and my creative life allows me to help sort it out. But I'm happy to write and think and tell jokes about other things moving forward.
Yeah, nice. So I do want to also, before we, this is, you know, TV talk, the new season of Dark Side of the Ring is premiering. You hosted Dark Side of the Ring After Dark, all of which
I did.
I watched. What do
you? I love Dark Side of the Ring so much that they canceled the after show I hosted, and I still watch every episode of Dark Side of the Ring. And I'm not even mad that they let me go.
Which, I loved that after show. I was like, I want to hear the wrestlers talk more. I was like, all I'm going to do after each episode is go on YouTube and look up like shoot videos of these guys still talking about this stuff. So you may as well have an after show.
I'll tell you, can I also tell you that after show, I'm lucky that that job still happened. They were building a studio in Brooklyn, and I was going to host like a studio, almost like a talk show after show, and interview people in person and do bits. The pandemic crushed it. And I actually think that there is a chance that that after show is the first show that made it to TV that they went and did on a bunch of remote webcams in the pandemic. Like, I think history, if they actually researched the date and they were scrambling. So
Yeah, I loved doing it because it was with that Chris Benoit episode, right? Was the first
yeah. And then it's just me in a house in upstate New York with my 9-month-old son 2 rooms away and my wife trying to keep him quiet and me on a webcam. Like, what is it? Literally a webcam stacked on top of Tupperware containers that I found because my parents were in Florida at the time. So it was wild and a missed opportunity, but I feel really lucky they took a chance on me. And if we had been able to do the show that we had originally thought of with a late night talk vibe, I think it would have been something really, really special.
Yeah.
And I'm still bummed. That one's a missed opportunity.
I absolutely love Dark Side of the Ring. A friend and I, we live watch it together on our phones. We're so obsessed with it. What stories are you hoping they cover this new season, or do you know?
I know that they're doing one on Earthquake.
Yeah.
Which I'm interested in because it's funny because you start to think like, man, at some point Darkseid's going to run out of stories, right?
That's what I thought. I was like, how, come on, we've done the darkest ones, haven't we? Like, what else is there? And then they're always like, oh, no, we got more for you.
Turns out the world of wrestling is full of endless scumbag behavior. I mean, they're going to do a whole season on Vince McMahon at some point.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Like, they're going to do a 10-episode season on it.
I can't wait to piss on that man's grave. Sorry to, I can't, I just hate him so much.
It's wild too, because now that he's gone, it's like not only is that a clearly cancerous presence that affected a lot of people's lives negatively in so many ways, but also the wrestling stories are better without him around.
Yeah.
Like wrestling is, the WWE is demonstrably better right now than it's been in many, many years. And it's hard not to equate one with the other.
He never really had good ideas, guy. I don't know how he managed to have such a hold other than family name and the money. Because it's so many things you would think would make shareholders go, what are we doing with this guy? Why are we just going to let him do all this illegal stuff and just keep paying for it? What?
Yeah, it's nuts.
Yeah, I hope they do a whole season on him. They did do a Vice episode. They have this show called The 9 Lives of, and they look at like controversial figures and like Dave Chappelle and Joe Rogan, and they did one about Vince McMahon. But it was just like, yeah, he just keeps coming back. They can't keep him down. He's facing heat right now. And you know what? He'll probably just go back to work tomorrow.
Yeah, it was really, really nuts. All of it. It was really nuts. But I know they're doing an Earthquake episode, which is all I really know about him is that he was the Shockmaster, which is one of the greatest clips in history.
Yeah.
And that he also was like 23 and looked like he was 55. I would love to someday see an episode about Haku, aka Meng, because I don't think they've done that one yet. And there's a lot of stories about how he was apparently like the most badass street fighter in wrestling history, and stories of him getting in bar fights where he would just reach out and with his thumb, like pop a guy's eye out of the socket.
Yeah.
And where you're like, oh, that's, I would watch an episode on all those stories because that sounds nuts.
Yeah. I know in some of the Reddit forum, I love it. I read the Reddit for people really want that episode, and they're just like, how is it not happening yet?
Ricky Dozan, who kind of invented Japanese pro wrestling and then was supposedly, I think they may have covered this, I'm not certain, but was murdered by the Yakuza who stabbed him with piss and shit covered swords.
Yeah.
Is the story? I'm like, I would watch it. I don't think they've done a full episode.
They haven't done a full episode, but it like comes up in other people's stories when it's like, and they went to Japan for a little bit, and it's like, just come on, do it.
Yeah, yeah. Those ones come to mind.
It looks like they're going to do Beefcake, Harley Race, Buff Bagwell, Kurt Angle, Chris Adams, Sandman, and Black Saturday are the ones that have been announced too.
Sandman, I'll watch. I mean, your family went to the Sportatorium, and I can tell you that while I never went to the ECW arena, I did used to go see ECW live in Asbury Park.
Oh, that's so cool.
Anything about ECW, I'm always happy to watch.
I'm obsessed with ECW. We could do a whole other episode about that.
I don't know if I've ever been less physically safe than while attending ECW wrestling in Asbury Park, New Jersey.
Yeah, that's every clip I've ever seen. I'm just like, I can't believe people are just standing. I'm like, move. And it's incredible. So we're going to have to maybe talk about it. You got to come back. We can talk
Say
about
the
it.
Word.
This has been so great. We were at the hour. We talked about some great shows, some great TV news, and so much wrestling, which makes me incredibly happy. Is there anything else that you want to plug? Where should people follow you? And obviously, they should check out your new book, Dad at Peace.
Well, they can follow me at chrisgeth.com and Chris Gethard on Twitter, Chris Geth on Instagram. But mostly, instead of plugging my own stuff, I want to say congrats on the album. And I hope it goes well. And I hope everybody goes out and gets it.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you. And if you listen to this, you probably know, but it's Ice Cream Money. It's out everywhere. You can even get it on vinyl that I made them make pink. So,
ooh,
yeah.
Vinyl. Nice.
Thank you so much. That's so sweet. Listeners, you know, watch The Traitors. The finale's coming up. Keep watching Love is Blind so we can talk about those silly, silly marriages.
I just started the new season yesterday. I was at the gym. That show is also kind of the down point of American civilization, right?
Like, it truly is. It's the cross-section of everything that should matter to Americans, family, marriage. And it goes, okay, so what if we just made it cheap? What if we were like...
I never want to hear a complaint about gay marriage again in my entire life. The fact that middle Americans are clearly the ones watching that show, you no longer get to talk about...
Like, but if marriage were old gay people... No, you guys are getting married in pods after 4 weeks together.
Stop. Everybody stop.
I'm ready for a gay version of Love is Blind. I'm ready for them to figure it out where they can do it with gay people. That's what I'm ready for.
Oh, that would be a sensation.
They did Queer Ultimatum. It's time to make Love is Blind queer. Netflix, you hear me. Make it happen. that's all I got for you on the watch list. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back next week with another episode.
TV I Say with Ashley Ray. Another episode.
TV I Say with Ashley Ray is an Earwolf production made by me, Ashley Ray Harris. It's engineered by Abby Aguilar, produced by Anita Flores, executive produced by Amelia Chapelo, and our original theme song is by Rafia. It means so much to me if you go rate, review, subscribe, follow TV I Say, let us know what you think, and tell your friends, share with your golden girls, tell your boys. If you love my TV recommendations, let everyone you know. For special TV Club members, join my Patreon.
Whether you're shopping for grads, getting an early gift for dad, or just looking for a little something new or used for your shelf, you'll find it at HPB. And you'll get almost everything for an extra 20% off during the big sale at Half Price Books this Memorial Day weekend. Saturday, May 25th through Monday, May 27th, save big in-store at your local Half Price Books and at HPB.com. Offer cannot be combined with other coupons. Exclusions apply. To learn more, visit HPB.com.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang it in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.